We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 27, Verse 17, Understanding Material Nature. Deva Hutirvacha,
Deva Hutirvacha,
Purusham Rakatirvaman,
Purusham Rakatirvaman,
Navi Munchati Karjiche,
Navi Munchati Karjiche,
Anyanyapa Shayatvacha,
Anyanyapa Shayatvacha,
Nityatvad Anayo Prabho,
Nityatvad Anayo Prabho,
Devahuti
Uvacha.
Devahuti
said. Devahuti said.
Purusham.
Purusham.
Spirit soul.
Spirit soul.
Prakriti.
Prakriti.
Material nature.
Material nature.
Brahman.
Brahman.
O Brahman.
O Brahman.
Na.
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 Not.
Vimunchati.
Vimunchati.
Does release.
Does release.
Karmichi,
Anytime.
She, Devahuti, inquired, My dear Brahman, does material nature ever give release to the spirit soul? Since one is attracted to the other eternally, how is there separation possible? Report. Devahuti, the mother of Kapiladeva, here makes her first inquiry. Although one may understand that spirit soul and matter are different, their actual separation is not possible, either by philosophical speculation or by proper understanding. The spirit soul is the marginal potency of the Supreme Lord, and matter is the external potency of the Lord. The two internal potencies have somehow or other been combined, and since it is so difficult to separate one from the other, how is it possible for the individual soul to become liberated? By practical experience, one can see that when the soul is separated from the body has no real existence. And when the body is separated from the soul, one cannot perceive the existence of the soul. As long as the soul and body are combined, we can understand that there is life. But when they are separated, there is no manifested existence of the body or the soul. This question asked by Devahuti of Kapiladeva is more or less impelled by the philosophy of voidism. The voidists say the consciousness is a product of combination of matter, and that as soon as the consciousness is pure, is gone, the material combination dissolves. And therefore, there is ultimately nothing but voidness. This absence of consciousness is called nirvana in Mayavada philosophy. Vatkam karati vachanam bhagavam vaite yagatam vande srimudhinatamarinam om ganati randasya gananjasvataya
chakshuram nitam yena tasmai srimudhinatamarinam.
So here we have two quite different energies. One is the external energy, and one is the marginal energy, which is spiritual. But they are combined together. We see our bodies, it is a combination of these two energies. How can we be merged in this body? We're spiritual beings. What is the glue that is holding us to this material body? The glue is, there is a knot in the heart. And the knot is called false ego or ahamkara. That is the glue. That is, there's a knot which is connecting the body and the soul together. And that is called false ego. So, we are hearing here in this chapter the process of jnana. actually is described. We're analyzing the false ego. We're trying to see how to separate the false ego from the body, from the real ego, how to awaken the real ego. So it says here in this purport, Prabhupada says that how is it possible to become liberated? It is not possible by philosophical speculation or even by proper understanding. If you just understand, okay, I'm not this body, it's not enough. And that's why Prabhupada said this question is more or less impelled by the philosophy of voidism. You know, how is it possible? You know, we just have to dissolve the combination and then the soul can be free. So, in the next chapter, we will see how the answer is yoga. Yoga is there. So Devahuti's intelligently asking how Jnana can possibly solve a problem of a combination of two energies. It's not possible just by understanding or knowing. How can, by analyzing these energies, can we separate them? We cannot say, okay, now here's my false ego, here's my material body, here's my soul, separate. No, can't do that by Jnana. So, actually, in any philosophy, four questions must be answered. Four questions. Any philosophy, Krishna consciousness, Buddhism, other philosophies. First of all, what is the cause of creation? That question has to be answered. Secondly, what is the cause of suffering? Why are we suffering in this world? Third, what is the concept of truth? What is reality? What is the truth? And fourth is, what is the process to realize the truth, to achieve the goal? So these four questions, what is the cause of creation? What is the cause of suffering? What is the concept of truth? And what is the process or the goal to be achieved? How do we get to the truth? So there are three concepts which you must understand and how they are related to each other. So the answers to these questions we will find in Krishna consciousness, and also there's an atheistic Kapiladeva which has answers to these four questions too. So today I'd like to compare what are our answers to these four questions, and what are the impersonalistic, the voidist answers to these four questions. Very interesting. Srila Prabhupada has explained this in many, many places. So this chapter now, it's all about jnana. It's all about analyzing. By knowledge, by intelligence, we analyze these things. The next chapter will be about yoga. So in a Kapiladeva Sankhya Yoga, he brings together jnana and yoga to properly engage them in devotional service. So that's the synthesis. So let us see, what is our answer? What is the cause of creation? What does Kapiladeva say? What is the cause of creation? He says that the Supreme Lord, Purusham, the Supreme Purusham, is the cause of creation. He glanced at property. So now we're bringing, so there's three concepts. There's Ishvara, the Supreme Lord, there's Prakriti, and there's Jiva. So we are the Jiva, we are the marginal energy. Then we have Prakriti, which is the external energy. But then we have the controller of both, which is Ishvara. So these three things we have to understand, and what is their relationship. So we say the Lord is the cause. What does the atheistic Sankhya philosophy of the atheistic Kapiladeva say? He says that Prakriti is the cause. And after Prakriti, Prakriti produces Purusha and Prakriti again. So this is a materialistic idea that life comes from matter. Matter is the ultimate cause. This is the atheistic philosophy of the scientists also. They have the same philosophy. There's an inexplicable, unmanifested void. From nothing came everything. So what is our experience of this, that nothing came from everything? Can we produce anything from nothing? This is not a very realistic philosophy. So first of all, cause of creation, Supreme Lord, cause of suffering. So Kapila says that the cause of suffering is when the jiva, when the spiritual energy misidentifies with the material energy property. So when we think we are property, that is a cause of suffering. Because property is temporary, property is birth, means birth, death, disease, and old age. But you're giving me a signal back there.
There's a notification on the mobile, I think it's probably recording.
I can't hear you. You have to push the button or something?
No. It's recording. It was just like there was just a pop-up, but it's still recording.
Oh, I see. There was a pop-up. Okay.
Yeah, but it's still recording.
It's still recording. And they don't see the pop-up on there.
No.
Yes, we have to pay attention to our internet audience here. There are more people listening than we know, we can see. Thank you. So, cause of suffering is when we think we're property, when the jiva misidentifies. The atheistic philosophy says the cause of suffering is property, and it's false. Property doesn't exist, but we think it exists, and so we suffer. And so that is the atheistic view. And so the personalists, they say, well, our problem is that we are feeling emotions. We are having personal relationships. And this is just a combination of material elements. The scientists are saying, you know, that there's a chemical for happiness, there's a chemical for anger. They're isolating these different chemicals in the brain. And they don't understand that these emotions have a deeper cause, a deeper place. And relationships also. So they say the solution is no relationships, and then no more happiness and stress. The cause of suffering is relationships. The cause of suffering is this body. So just finish the body, finish relationships, and you'll be happy. That is their idea. The void is the goal. And so this is the cause of suffering, comparison. So sometimes people commit suicide. They think, well, if I commit suicide, all the pains and pleasures will be finished. Because he has no idea that the body is just an instrument to feel. The soul is actually, the spiritual being is suffering because he's identifying with these material things. So the devotees, is there suffering for a devotee? We feel the separation from Krishna. And that is, it's not real suffering, but it's a spiritual ecstasy. The problem is when we identify the self with our body. There's a verse in First Canto, Yayasamohitam jiva, atmanam tikurapakam, paropi manate natan tapitam chapipatite. Due to this external energy, the jiva, although transcendental, thinks himself a material product, and so he suffers. So we're spirit soul. How do we get out of this suffering? Of course, that we'll talk about later, process and the goal. And actually, the goal is continuous pleasure. And we realize that Krishna is servant, then there's no more material pains and pleasure. So we have discussed two questions, cause of suffering and the cause of creation. The third question, what is our concept of truth? What do we say? So there's these three items, the Ishvara, the Jiva, and the property. So truth is that Jiva is servant of Ishvara. It's the servant of Krishna. We are spiritual beings. We're meant to be connected to Ishvara. When we suffer, the cause of suffering is when we want to connect to Prakriti. That is the cause of suffering. Now, what do the atheistic Kapila impersonalists say? That the jiva is equal to Ishvara. The jiva is Ishvara. Jiva is God. So, yes. So now we're getting out of the Buddhist idea, but we're going more into the impersonalist Shankara philosophy. The jiva is God. As soon as you find out you're God, then you won't suffer anymore. But trying to become God is very difficult because we're not God. It won't happen. So we also say that the jiva is conscious. Consciousness is coming from the jiva and active. And jiva is the doer. We can choose, we can make a choice between spiritual and material. But the atheistic philosophies, they say jiva is conscious but inactive, and prakriti is the doer. We can't do anything about it. We're just, unless we just dissolve the body and the mind, then we can't do anything. So they try to bring the senses, they try to stop the senses from the sense objects. They say the only way you can get free is to stop the senses from interacting with the sense objects. And we say, no, no. There is spiritual pleasure. There is pleasure in the spiritual world with senses. And so we connect our senses with Ishvara. Just so we disconnect from prakriti, we connect with Ishvara. If we connect with Ishvara, automatically we disconnect from prakriti, from the external energy. So we say that life comes from life. They say that life comes from matter. So concept of truth. Now, what is the process and the goal? So our process, of course, is, I just said, we connect the senses with Ishvara, and then we get the same, we become on the same level as Ishvara. If we connect the senses with prakriti, then we become on the same level with prakriti. It's temporary, miserable, full of ignorance. So what is the impersonal process? It's very hard labor, and they have to do it alone, without the mercy of the Lord. They don't have the mercy. And they have to separate, detach themselves from matter and their own strength. And this is the atheistic Kapila Dev Sankhya philosophy. They count the elements and they see, okay, soul is different, matter is different, separate. It's not that easy. Very difficult. They can't do it, really. They can't do it on their own. You need the mercy of the Lord. I saw one mantra that they chant, nothing is everything, and everything is nothing. That's pretty depressing, if you think about it. Everything is nothing, and what is the use of living? And that's why this Sartre, one of the philosophers, he committed suicide, because there is no meaning to life. There's no meaning to life, so why live? So he followed his philosophy, he drove his car off a cliff. So this is not the truth. This is not the truth. The truth is that we can connect with Krishna. We chant beautiful names of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
We meet Radha and Krishna, we have a relationship with them in Goloka Vrindavan. Goloka Premadana, Hari Nam Sankirtan. The problem is we have no attachment for that. So there's a verse in the fourth canto, 22nd chapter, verse 29. Devotees always engaged in the service of the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord can very easily overcome hard-knotted desires for fruitive activities. But this is difficult, because it's difficult the non-devotees, the gyanis, the yogis, although trying to stop the waves of sense gratification, cannot do so. So therefore, Vajravasudeva, you are advised to engage in devotional service of Krishna. So in personalists, they have a hard, hard labor to struggle to get the senses away from the sense objects. But the devotees have a labor of love. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach us how to love. We don't know how to love in this world. We don't know what is love. And so our Anandakanda is a process of happiness. Is it a path of happiness, and it's a path of love? The path of jnana and the path of yoga, path of karma and jnana, they are like two pots of poison. Kevala Vishara Mandam, Narottamdas Thakur says. But our path is the path of Anandakanda, the path of happiness. The path, the devotional service is happiness. And when you meet Radha and Krishna, and when you please them, and when you serve them, when you meet them, that's also happiness. So Krishna is everything. We say, Krishna is everything, and I am his servant. So when you serve Krishna, then you give everything. So again, I'll compare the summary of the processes. The atheistic Sankhya analyzes the elements, separates the soul from them to gain liberation. And Kapiladeva Sankhya, we do perform devotional service, he analyzes the elements, then he takes the elements and connects them in yoga, bhakti yoga, to the Purusha. He connects prakriti and jiva to the Purusha. So devotees also take prakriti and jiva, they take themselves, they take the material energy and unite, in service to the Supreme Ishvara. We see everything, we see Prakriti, we see this energy, this belongs to Krishna, and we see Jiva, I also belong to Krishna, so therefore let me unite with Krishna, let me serve him. So that's why devotees preach, because they see that people are wasting their lives trying to connect with Prakriti, which will not give them happiness. All the advertisements are urging us to connect with Prakriti. What is the materialistic solution? You drink and you smoke and you forget your sufferings. But then the next day, the sufferings come back, and especially if you drink and smoke, you'll get more suffering. Their idea of happiness is to sleep on the weekends. Oh, I slept 10, oh, I got up at 10, I got up at 12. Yes, that is their idea of happiness, ignorance. Their idea of happiness is painful in the beginning, painful in the end. So this is, that is not a solution. So now what is the goal? The goal of the impersonalists is they want to merge and lose their individuality to free themselves from the pain of being a person. And this is based on fear of relationship. Their whole thing is based on fear, not on love. Just like Prabhupada gives the example, there was a doctor that he came to visit one family. The son was sick. The son was suffering from fever. He was suffering so much. Doctor gave injection. The son died. So the father said, "But my son died." So the doctor said, "Well, is the fever gone?" So this is the impersonalist idea. Okay, let's just kill ourselves, the fever will be gone, and we'll be happy. No, it's not like that. We want to become healthy. Healthy is eternity, bliss, and knowledge. We want to become healthy. So after we get free from material misery, then we can be engaged in our healthy life of serving Krishna. They think Brahman is the goal. Okay, the goal is just to merge and forget ourselves. But our goal is to serve Krishna, to go to the spiritual world, to have eternal happiness. We keep our individuality to exchange feelings of love with Krishna. But they merge. Why? So who goes to the Brahman? The demons, the impersonalists. The Brahman is just a white light. They go there. And Prabhupada also gave one example. Because otherwise they will commit a disturbance in this world. So they go to the Brahman, they can't do any mischief there. So just like you have a naughty child, you say, go sit in the corner. So the demons, Krishna puts them in the Brahman, they can't do any bad things. So go sit in the Brahman for a while. Don't do any nonsense. And so this is for the impersonalists, Mayavadis. The Mayavadis don't make it to the Brahman because they're offensive to Krishna. But the Brahmavadis, the impersonalists, they can make it there. But if they're really lucky, they'll have association with devotees and become a devotee, so they don't have to stay in Brahman forever. It's not forever anyway, because it's not our eternal nature. Our eternal nature is Jiva Sarupai, Krishna Nityadas. So, the destination of the devotees is Vaikuntha, where all anxieties are completely destroyed. So we should not mistake that the destination of devotees and impersonalists are the same. It's spiritual, but it's not the same. Again, I'd like to talk about three kinds of transcendentalists. Prabhupada talks about this in one purport, the fourth canto. Gyanis, yogis, and bhaktas. So all of the gyanis, the yogis, the bhaktas, they're all trying to overcome the influence of the senses. And we have a nice analogy here, Prabhupada gives, that the sense desires, is like incessant waves of a river. If you go and see a river, you see the waves always coming. So the waves of the river flow all the time, and it's very difficult to stop them. So the waves of desire to enjoy are so strong. These are like our waves to enjoy this world. They cannot be stopped by any process other than bhakti yoga. So devotees, by devotional service, become so overwhelmed with bliss, automatically desires for material enjoyment stop. The gyanis and yogis, they're not attached to the lotus feet of Krishna, so they struggle against the waves of desire. In other words, the gyanis and yogis, they try to be free, but they become more and more entangled in false philosophical speculation. So, one time I was living in Goa, in India, and there's an analogy that actually how you stop the senses, this analogy I experienced in Goa, but the waves of material desires, they're going in the river and they're flowing, but when they get to the ocean, then when there's a high tide, the ocean overwhelms the river. When I was in Goa, I used to swim in a river during monsoon because the ocean was too crazy. So we would swim in the river and it would be okay, it would be sweet water. But when the tide came in, the ocean overcame the river and the river went backwards and it became salty. So that is compared to the analogy. So the material desires are going on and on. But when you hit the ocean of devotional service, when there's high tide, then, and when you're always thinking how to serve Krishna, how to improve your service, how to expand the service, then that ocean of your intelligent desires, how to serve Krishna, it overcomes the waves of the river, and the river, your senses are controlled. So that's a beautiful analogy Prabhupada gives of how devotees control their desires by serving the lotus feet of Krishna. So with intelligence, devotee plans so many things for service of the Lord and Krishna consciousness. Stagnant material desires are overflooded by desire to serve Krishna. Because desire is everything. Desire is part of the soul. And we simply have to change our desires. I was just reading Bhagavatam yesterday. There was one beautiful purport. Prabhupada says that if we want Krishna, he's ready. We can have him. All we have to do is chant or do some service and Krishna will be there with us. It's not like after Krishna left the planet, then he's not here anymore. If we want him, so that's the key. We have to want Krishna. We have to want devotional service. We have to change our desires. And that's what happens when we do bhakti yoga, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. If you follow these rules and regulations, you will develop a desire to attain to me. So that's what we're doing the whole day here. We're trying to get a desire, a spiritual desire, to go back to God and to serve Krishna. Now, even now. So we have different ways. Now our senses may be attracted to the material energy. But also our senses were attracted, somehow we were attracted to Krishna consciousness. Some of us like to see the beautiful deities, how they're decorated. Some of us are attracted to the kirtan, chanting of the holy name. And there is a purport in the, there's a prayer of Brahma 10, 14, 7, where it's described the scientists may are trying, maybe one day they'll be able to count the molecules of the earth. Or maybe one day they'll be able to count all the rays of the sun. Thank you. Maybe one day they'll be able to count each of the snowflakes, because each snowflake is different. They're all different. But they'll never be able to count the qualities of Krishna. And Lord Ananta Shesha, who has thousands of mouths, he has counted the molecules of the earth. He has counted the sun rays. And he has counted the snowflakes. But he hasn't counted the qualities of Krishna. And he has thousands of mouths. And he's been chanting the glories of Krishna since the beginning, before the creation, eternally. And still he hasn't found the end of Krishna's qualities. And you know why? Sanatana Goswami explains that Krishna has a quality for each and every one of us to attract us to him. Each and every, a special quality for each and every one of the individual jivas. Krishna has a special quality. So we were attracted by so many things, some of us by the chanting, some by books, some by the pictures, beautiful pictures. And some by Srila Prabhupada. by his example, by his words, his love, his glance. So I'd just like to share with you one story to finish up today's class about one of my godbrothers from Europe, which country I'm not sure. So he was a boxer, a fighter by profession. And he was a fighter. And he used to come and visit the devotees at the temple. And they would say, why don't you just stay here and join us? He said, no, no, I'm too attached to my fighting. So then Prabhupada came to visit. So he stayed for a few days. And Prabhupada was leaving. Prabhupada got into his car. And this fighter, he was in the crowd of devotees. He was pushed forward, and his face was plastered on Prabhupada's window of his car. So Prabhupada was looking at him. And after he came, after the car left, the fighter said, okay, I'm joining. And they said, well, what about your fighting? He said, well, after a glance like that from Srila Prabhupada, I can't go back to my fighting. So that is the power and the mercy of the pure devotee. He can change our desires if we allow him to, if we want him to, if we allow Krishna to come in our life, in our day, then our desires can change. And so the devotees, they go out and they preach and they try to change people's desires. I can tell another story from, again, oh, this is from Eastern, no, this is from Scandinavia. This happened last year in Scandinavia. True story. One person came to join the temple, and the person had a story. The person said that they had a near-death experience, and they were taken to Yamaraj. And Yamaraj said, so you are sinful, you have to suffer, you have done all these sinful activities. Then he asked Chandragupta, any good thing this person has done? So then Yamaraj's secretary said, yes, the devotees were doing Harinam, and this person waved. Hmm. And all the people in the court of Yamaraj said, oh. Then Yamaraj said, how many times did they wave? Four times. Oh. Okay. Then Yamaraj said to the person, so, if I send you back, what will you do? He said, I'll become a Krishna devotee. Send him back, and that person joined Hare Krishna movement. So that was the story I just heard that happened in Scandinavia last year. So this Harinam is very, very important to engage the conditioned souls. When I was in Sweden, they have a very, very active Harinam where they, you know, will be walking down the street, and then the leader will follow somebody going this way and just hold on to his shoulders, and everybody will hold on to that person's shoulders. All of a sudden, he's leading the Harinam. Or else they'll just bring somebody, grab somebody, and have them dance with us. And so this is very good for the person. This is very good that we can engage people. We can take them back to Godhead. We can save them from Yamaraj just by doing Harinam, just by distributing books. And so I'll stop here if there's any questions or comments about this class. Yes?
Mataji, this, the two questions I have. First question is, when you started your class, you said that our body is glued together because of the false ego. So, but the
glued to the soul.
Yes. So, but the devotee always come out of the false ego. But if we leave a false ego, our body will disintegrate. So, is it not a good to keep the false ego?
Oh, so the question is, I think we need to keep the false ego, otherwise what will happen to us, yes?
Yes, exactly.
Well, you know, there's such a thing as real ego. False ego is just a covering. So if just like your body, now your body is covered by dress. So the soul is covered by the dress of false ego. So without the false ego, you're still alive, right? Without your clothes, you still exist, the body. It is. So without your false ego, you can live also. Isn't that good news? You can have real ego, means be the person who you really are, servant of Krishna. When you act as servant of Krishna, then that is real ego. That is your real self. The impersonalists, they think, we want to merge in Brahman. But the devotees think, we want to act in Brahman. So theirs is a very passive process. Ours is active. Because the soul is active, and they won't be happy just merging in the Brahman. Real ego is there. False ego means you see somebody doing devotional service and you get envious. Oh, that person isn't doing nicely. Oh, I could do better. Oh, he's making mistakes. Real ego is, oh, how wonderfully is that devotee doing service? You see the mood. You see, oh, he's serving Krishna. I wish I could serve Krishna like that. And so the devotee, one quality of Krishna, actually I was just reading also that knowledge, there's five categories, I can't remember now, but the category you don't like to see anybody suffer. So that's a quality of Krishna, it's a quality of a devotee. Para dukha dukhi. If you see somebody suffering, then you feel unhappy. So false ego means when you see somebody suffering, you're happy. Mm-hmm. It's not me, haha. I'm okay. And real ego is when you see somebody suffering, then you feel compassion for that person. You want to help them and bring them to the eternal happiness of Krishna consciousness. So that's the difference. False ego is degrading us. It's like Gita says, the mind can be your friend or your enemy as well. So when the mind is controlled by false ego, it becomes our worst enemy. And when the mind is controlled by our real soul, real ego, then it becomes our friend. And you had another question?
Yes, the second question was relating to the truth, that you said how to seek the truth. And this the process of the seeking the truth is quite different from the way the Aristotle and the Greek philosopher, they explained seeking the truth. They said always asking the questions, and they ask questions and debating these questions, and that will transcend us to the new level. So everything should be evolutionary rather than it is a static. Now my question is whether if I take it as a granted that what it is said is the truth, so whether it will become this static?
Yeah, so the Gyanis, they think they have to speculate and figure out what is the truth by asking many questions. So Krishna talks about them in Bhagavad Gita. He says, Bhavaram Jamanamante Gyanavatman Prabhadite. After many, many births of trying to figure out the answers to the questions, they finally realize, oh, Krishna is everything. Vasudeva Saraviti. And they surrender to me. But an intelligent person, he would just accept, oh, Krishna is everything, and they surrender. He won't take many, many births. He just accepts immediately. So that is the difference. So we accept, yes, Krishna is everything. And we save a lot of births. We save a lot of time and speculation. And we don't have to speculate. There is some truth in their process. Because the first aphorism of Vedanta Sutra is Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now it's time to inquire into the absolute truth. So, that's the beginning of Vedanta Sutra. And that's also Bhagavatam's commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So the beginning of Bhagavatam says, Jivasya Tata Jigyasya. That the purpose of the human form of life is to inquire into the absolute truth. So, that is a fact. We do inquire. But then at the beginning of Bhagavatam, it says, what is the absolute truth? It says, Janmadhyasya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Janmadhyasya Taha. So Vedanta Sutta says, Janmadhyasya Taha, the truth is that from which everything is emanating. But the commentary explains, who is it? Where is it emanating? They think Brahman. Okay, it must be Brahman. But actually, it's Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Who the truth is emanating from is Krishna, Vasudeva. And then that's first. Then comes Janmadhyasya Taha. So it's good if you get the answers to your questions without struggling for many births. So that's why we follow the process of Bhakti Yoga. We accept, okay, the great sages, Vyasadeva, he wrote Vedanta Sutra, and now he wrote a commentary so we can understand Vedanta. Vedanta Sutra we can't understand, very difficult. He wrote a commentary. Srimad Bhagavatam, now we can understand the Vedanta Sutra. He's explained it. So let's accept the commentary by the author himself. He has explained. At first he said, yes, you should inquire. And if you study Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, it's all questions and answers. It's full of questions and answers. But it's questions about absolute truth. Yeah. These questions have already been asked and they've already been answered. So if you have the question, you just look it up in Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and you'll find the answers. No need to try to figure it out with your dull brain for many, many births. So yeah, Prabhupada, he liked Socrates because he believed in the soul and he died for it. He quotes Socrates that because he believed that the soul is eternal and I'm not this body. So when they gave him poison to drink, he drank it. He said, and they said, so how shall we bury you? He said, first you have to catch me, and then you can. Because he knew he's not going to die. The body's the soul is eternal. And so yeah, it will take them many births. Perhaps some of them got born in this movement, who knows. Finally, they got the answers to their questions. If their desire was strong enough, they'll get the mercy of the pure devotee to get the answers to their questions. But that process is very tedious. I mean, just try. Just try to do it their way. Try to do it Aristotle's way and that one's way. And try to do it that way and see. And then try this way and see the result. Even before you get there, you're happy. You know, you become free from your suffering. Any other questions? Yes.
Pali Maharaj used to conquer the demigods who were devotees of the Lord. So why is he considered a Mahajan?
Oh, such a nice question. Pali Maharaj conquered the demigods. But he was a demon, born in a demon family. So how come he's considered a Mahajan? So the answer is, if you read the whole story of Pali Maharaj, when he was, see, the demons, usually they don't like to accept the truth. So his guru, Shukracharya, he knew when Vamanadeva came to beg land from him, Vamanadeva said, I just want three steps of land. His guru said, no, he's Vishnu, don't give him the land. But what did Pali Maharaj do? He didn't listen, because his guru taught him before, you should, you know, it's good to worship Vishnu. And so then when his guru said, no, don't worship Vishnu, then what did Pali Maharaj do? He didn't listen. He said, no, you told me to worship Vishnu, and I gave my promise. And because he gave everything to Vamanadeva, he became a Mahajan. Even though he was a demon, see, that means demons can become devotees. Prahlad was born in a demon family, he was a devotee. Pali Maharaj was born in a demon family, he became devotee. So some of us who were born in demon families, we became devotees. We were eating meat before, we became devotees. But we decided to surrender to Prabhupada and Krishna. So that's what Pali Maharaj did. He said, no, I promised, I'm going to give this land to, I don't care if he's Vishnu. And then he took everything away, and then he punished Pali Maharaj, he tied him up. And he said, so you promised me three, and I covered this whole universe with two steps. Where am I going to put the third step? Pali Maharaj said, well, the only thing left is my body, because I was the owner of these things. So you put your foot on my head. So he completely surrendered everything to the Lord, and he became a Mahajan. He became a great devotee. So all of us can become great devotees if we just surrender everything to Krishna. Even though you were born in a devotee family, but we weren't. Well, we surrendered to Prabhupada. We surrendered everything to Prabhupada when he asked us to. And so we became devotees. But maybe not Mahajans yet. But at least we became devotees. So everybody can, even the meat eater, who's eating meat, who's doing all the nonsense in the material world, drinking, smoking, they can all become devotees, and that is the mercy of Lord Chaitanya in this age of Kali. That he's picking up everybody. He doesn't see if you're qualified or not qualified. Come, here, take prasadam. Chant Hare Krishna. Read his books. Do some service. Serve the deities. And so then we can all, that is the hope for this age of Kali. Before other ages, it was so strict, you couldn't follow Sangha Yoga, sacrifice, deity worship in previous ages. You needed gold, silver, so many opulent things. So that's why we chant Hare Krishna, because you don't need money, it's free. And anybody can chant Hare Krishna, anytime, anywhere, no rules. So, thank you, beautiful question. Any other questions? Jai, all of us, Krishna, Hare Krishna.